The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2010 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2010. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Okay, I guess we'll begin, and I'll open in a word of prayer. Why don't we bow our heads together? We thank you, Father of lights, for every good and perfect gift coming down from you. We thank you for our Lord Jesus, the most wonderful gift of all, and for eternal life in his name. And today we thank you for this conference and for all the participants that are here. Lord, you have saved us and called us to be your own children and promised that all of our children would be taught by you. So we look to you, Father, and rely on you to do as you have said. Teach us to teach our children, that the next generation might know your truth, that they would set their hope in you and not forget your works. And use me, Lord, this day. Please help me and equip me to encourage others and to share the things that I've learned. In Jesus' name, amen. I don't know what inspires all of you or has inspired you to be a teacher, but for me, it's a place I didn't really know very well. Back in upstate New York on country roads, the little building that I used to go by with my mother. And to her and her seven cousins that walked there from the neighboring farms, and for my grandparents, my mother's parents, it was a little country school, and it was a magical place. It was a one-room schoolhouse, and I think that's why I've always loved Winslow Homer's painting, that I have a print of here. I've always had a print of it in my classroom since I started teaching back in 1972. It reminds me of my roots because I grew up just hearing about all these wonderful things that happened in this little one-room schoolhouse on Schoharie Turnpike in upstate New York. And when I would go, my mother would take me on the train to New York City and we'd go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And she'd show me this huge, enormous painting of the Horse Fair by Rosa Bonheur and tell me all about it. And she would help me study, like for the New York State Regents, she knew all the quotes from all the classics. Where had she learned that? At a one-room schoolhouse on a little country road. And I remember seeing that little boarded-up building and could never quite understand how it could be such a magical place to her and my grandparents, who always spoke of it so highly. But because they had these wonderful teachers who were so inspiring, who taught them so much, who were excellent, they had to be excellent at integrating things, or how could they get through so much for eight grades, first through eighth grade, and teach them all the reading and writing and arithmetic. And not only that, but have the children love it. They didn't do everything we do, but some of what they did, we can get a spark of that. And if we can make school a delightful place for our children to be, we've succeeded. And as Doug Wilson and my administrator have often said, if you love the Lord, you love your children, and you love the subject, you are going to be a successful teacher. There's going to be times that you're going to need to work hard, take a lot of time to plan. I've been doing this for a long time. Like I said, I started in 1972 when I first walked into my classroom of 31 third graders on Lookout Mountain, Georgia. I thought, what have I done? Who am I to be teaching all these little children, and what do I teach them? And I had all those teacher manuals. And even though my college professors had said, you should be able to teach without manuals, well, at that point, I had no idea really how to do that. But anyway, it is no wonder with my roots from my family farm, it's still in our family, a 100-year farm in New York, where my cousins still milk the cows, is no wonder that I've gone back to look at the soil and the roots to think about education. Pictures do often help us grasp so many ideas. We think about a picture is worth 1,000 words. But in the Bible, we have all these words and not many pictures. God has put the pictures in the world instead for us to see. And that helps us understand its teaching, the Bible, that is. Some of the most common pictures do have to do with farming, with cultivating the soil, sowing, and reaping a harvest. Think of the seeds as the grammar stage of knowledge which must be nurtured in good soil to grow up into the full understanding of the rhetoric stage. The soil is the truth about everything, just like the soil has to be balanced with a whole range of nutrients to produce good plants. So the teacher must nurture the children with a balanced understanding of the truth about God, about life, about the world. Now, a truly Christian worldview gets more specific than just the general idea that all truth is God's truth. Each of the subjects we teach can be traced back to its biblical roots. For instance, the orderly functions in math remind us of our precise creator God, the master of precise order. English and Latin are founded upon the gift of language from the one who is called the Word. The subjects we study in science, the birds, the fish, the trees, they all come from our great creator, and they were finished and complete at creation. But integration doesn't stop at showing how each of the subjects is related to the Bible. They also must be integrated with one another. For instance, at the beginning of each school year, we start with the exploration, the age of exploration, and we teach how astronomy affected exploration. We learn how astronomy helped the navigators navigate, the explorers navigate. We understand a little bit about economics, how that pushed them to explore. We understand about how the printing press was invented, and that spurred on the age of exploration by Marco Polo's book being widely spread and making people want to get out there and see where all of those wonderful treasures were that Marco Polo told about. And, of course, other subjects we touch on, religion and even politics a little bit. But the children learn it's an integrated world that they live in. So how do you teach such an integrated perspective? I'd like to share some of the insights I've gained into teaching children this integrated perspective, even at the grammar stage. And I hope to answer these basic questions. What tools, what classical tools are at your disposal as you work this process? And how do you use these tools to produce lessons? And how do you keep the students engaged at this stage of growing their understanding from the seed to the full-grown plant? First of all, let me say something about drilling and memorization. Sometimes people today have a problem with memorization. They think, oh, we shouldn't be having children memorize that much. And it's because we have a lack of confidence in the truth. But once we know these things are worthy of learning, they're worthy of being memorized because we know the truth. We know that it doesn't curb the children's creativity to have them learning it. We learn that they love to sing, they love to chant, and they love to use all of the classical tools, but we need to be the excited and interested, very energetic teachers that the children will catch that spark of love for learning from. Okay. The classical tools will enable you to teach successfully. So I'd like you to look at your list of classical tools. These are important because they'll help us repeat information over and over in a creative way that will help the children learn, because it is much repetition that moves the learning from the short-term memory to the long-term memory. And the variety keeps the children interested. And the tools such as music and also motions help the children because it also uses a different part of the brain. So all of these things work together to help the children keep these things in mind that we are trying to help them to learn. And one of the best things we can do as we use these classical tools is to get the children to be so excited, as Mrs. Detweiler was saying yesterday, the children go home and they're so excited they want to tell their parents about, or their brothers and sisters, about life on the plains, like with Laura Ingalls Wilder, or what it was like to grow up on the Utah frontier, or they want to sing the Mohs hardness scale of minerals, or any of these kinds of things. They want to go home and tell their parents, and then we find that they want to go to the library. The parents are so happy that my child wants to go buy this book. They want to draw about this. They want to write a story about it, and they tell you, oh, my child just loves learning about birds. They are a walking encyclopedia. They are so happy that the children want to learn more about what you have begun to teach them at school using the various classical tools. So the first one we want to look at are sound-offs. Many of you, I'm sure, use sound-offs. What I'm hoping to do is to inspire you to take the next step and perhaps write some of your own. Our curriculum changed to the point we were going to add the Revolutionary War. And I thought, wow, Revolutionary War with third grade, what will I do with that? And we were to teach them the important battles. I had 22 children, so 22 parts. We had to have 22 parts. And then I thought, okay, what does a third grader need to know about the American Revolution? What would an American child need to know third grade level? And I thought about famous quotes, how today you often hear how children, if you say a famous quote, they don't know who said that. So, and it made me think about my grandfather, who was named Nathan Hale, after the oft-quoted person from the Revolutionary War that said, I regret that I have but one life to live. And I thought that kind of sparked a thought in my mind. So I did some research and found a number of the famous quotes that I thought they could learn. And and then found the battles that I thought were most important and of interest to them that I could tell a story about, because storytelling is such an important skill. And so you want a story, the battles that are important, you want to have some good parts to them that will really thrill even the boys and the girls in third grade. So I put those together. And then at the end of the year, we went on a field trip to Morris Creek Battlefield, one of the small battlefields of the Revolutionary War, not too far from us. And as the costumed guide was starting to fire the musket, he said, I think I'm going to try to say part of the crisis by Thomas Paine. And he started, and he was stumbling a little bit. And I said, well, our children learned that. And so they started on, these are the times that try men's soul, the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot, and so on. They know it better than I do. And he was so impressed. They were very pleased with themselves. It was wonderful. So that inspired me to continue, because I hadn't written very many sound-offs lately, and I thought that is a good thing. Another thing I want to stop right here and tell you about is the positions. If you look, you'll see it's something on one of our sheets that talks about position one. We have some learning positions. If you know about children, that they love variety. Variety, even with these positions, helps. Position one, we just use periodically. It's sitting at the desk with their little hands folded, and so that at particular times when you need their attention, and especially for 5 and 10 minute segments, they can do it longer later in the year, but we're talking about when you need them to not play dinosaur on their desk, when you need them to not be getting the pencils out and pulling the erasers off the end, when you want them really paying attention to learn about a positives or whatever you're trying to get them to learn, and they really might not be interested at first, you have them sit in position one, and they're when you praise them, they are so proud of themselves. They love your praise. And so that's one position. Position two is getting ready for the sound off or any recitation. They pull their chair back and they have their hands on their laps like they're getting their picture taken. And then they are just all ready to pop up and say their part. They're paying close attention to you. So it's another learning position. Just, they know position. Instead of saying every time, take your chair, pull it back, sit back, put your hands up, they just know because you've trained them the first couple weeks of school to do that. So whenever we're doing a recitation, quick, position two, we're ready to go. And they are so proud of themselves. Then position three is stand up with your hands at your side. And you are really sharp. You are going to say this part excellently. And again, it takes training because you get some that always want to be scrunching their skirt up or putting the hands in the front, or the best one is leaning on the desk. You think a third grader wouldn't be too tired, but they often do that. They lean on the desk. And we go, nope, the hands are at the side. Let's be really sharp. And then we're really ready for our assemblies, our Grandparents' Day, or when we have visitors and want to see, and they want to be really sharp. It's fun anytime. So we have our regular relaxed position, which, of course, we want children to be relaxed and love school, and that's the whole point. Varying things as much as you can. Things in 5 and 10 minute segments are great for children. Not that you break them up, but that it's part of this integrated whole, which is what we're talking today. How you weave your day to be seamless. That doesn't happen overnight. It's something that you try and you work on, and when you've got it, you will feel it. You will know it. I mean, when I first started working on these things, I used to wonder what people were talking about when I heard some of these kinds of talks about integrating everything. Because there is the integration of all the subjects throughout the day, maybe having integrated unit. But we're also talking about, and I'll be saying this over and over probably, integrating everything they're learning throughout the day. So you might be relating something from Bible that you've had when you're doing Latin, something from Latin in reading, and so on. And you keep it in your mind. You're thinking fast, and you're helping the children follow you, and it all works together beautifully. Well, let's go on to songs. Please take out your fish song handout. And I'll have you sing this with me. You probably need to sing. It says from sound off to song. Now, I didn't put the whole sound off here. I just wanted to show you how I write songs. I know you had a wonderful whole workshop on songs. Yes. Okay, can you hear me now? Oh, more handouts. I'm sorry. I have a hearing loss. So I'm thankful if my dear colleague in the back, Chris, can help us. We're out. Oh, I am so sorry. And while we're handing those out, I will tell I have 22 songs and so that I'm getting together into a little booklet and CD. There's a list of what they are over there. If you're ever interested, you can email me. My email is in the booklet. While we're handing those out, just a little word about that. This is one of the ways I go about writing songs. We have a sound off. I did not write the sound off. And I only used 4 of the verses to write the song. And I like to write them to songs sometimes, if I can, that have something to do with the song itself. You can't always do that. Sometimes you just pick a ditty because it fits. But this one is to Down in the Meadow, my little bitty pool with a little mama fishy and the little fishy too. Anyway, that one. So it's about, we're studying North Carolina fish. So I thought, good, let's use that for the fish song. And we had a bird song that started similar to this, the first line. But then, I'm not going to go over every little detail, but you can see how the first stanza I got from the second sound off, child number 2, says, fish live in water, breathe with their gills, have scales, and swim using their fins. There are over 25,000 species of fish. And our sound off has been updated. It used to say over 20,000, which is why the song says 20,000. It's still true. There are over 20,000, but we have found out since then they're discovering more fish, or we had the wrong number, so it is over 25,000. But anyway, on to number 3, the third child, talks about the ichthyology, and so you see how I got that second verse from that. And then the third stanza comes from parts 4 and 5. And then there was nothing from the sound off for the last one, so I did a little bit of research and got something for that last class of fish, the cartilaginous, and there's our little song. So why don't we stand up? I bet you need to stand up. When I'm at these conferences, I'm so aware of how my children must get tired by the end of the day from sitting. And there's another thing we do in third grade in classical schools. We try to get the children up and down throughout the day and moving around. So I'll sing the first verse, and then we'll sing it again. We'll sing it all together. So it goes like this. Animals that people study or cook in a dish live in water and are classified as fish. They breathe through gills, have a backbone and fins, most have scales. And wow, can they really swim? All right, we're going to sing all four verses. I think you can do it. Here we go. Ready? Animals, some people study or cook in a dish, live in water and are classified as fish. They breathe through gills, have a backbone and fins, most have scales. And wow, can they really swim? Ichthyology's the subject where you bone up on fish. Over 20,000 species, so dive in with relish. The three main classes of fish are these: cartilaginous, jawless, and bony. Bony fish make up the largest class. Some examples would be catfish, trout, and bass. The smallest class is jawless fish. Some examples would be lamprey and hagfish. That leaves cartilaginous, the sharks and stingray. We better stop now or we'll be here all day. So you see, ichthyology's a boatload of fun. The fish gotta swim and we gotta run. You are good singers. Thank you. Have a seat. Thank you. I grew up singing kind of in an operetta. My mother and my aunt like to just sing, and I do that sometimes. I just walk into my classroom and start singing. I go, oh, what a beautiful morning. And they just kind of look at me like, what is with Mrs. Withington today? But I just kind of sing through the day. And so being in third grade is sort of like living in an operetta, too. But it keeps me interested. I think if I'm not bored, they won't be bored. And if somebody's looking kind of glum, I just think they might need a song sung about them or something, you know. And songs don't have to be your thing. And you can have recordings and use it. The children, like, you just push that button and there that is. And have children come up to the front of the room and lead the song. In fact, they'd probably rather sing than me. And after a while, they want to be the leaders. And so... You know, you can use music without you being the musician, believe me. Another thing I like to do with history is to choose a time period for the song. For instance, the 13 colonies. I thought, I don't know what the 13 colonies are. Shouldn't a classical Christian school be, shouldn't the children just be able to say what the 13 colonies are? Well, if the teacher can't, I must need a song. So I thought, well, I love sea shanties. I had taught 7th and 8th grade history, and with Treasure Island, you know, I decided we needed to learn sea shanties, and you know, there's forecastle shanties and long haul and short haul and stomp and stamp and go. And so I thought of this stamp and go one that I thought would fit the 13 colonies. And I thank Mrs. Slaughter, who's here, for thinking about how to do the motions with it. And this is a work song that would have been sung on the Mayflower when they came over here. And so I thought that's how we should do it. So I'll just sing that for you. It goes like this. 1607 to 1732 or 13 colonies were settled. Virginia, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Hampshire, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia. And of course in North Carolina, our children want to go, North Carolina. And and then they love to do it really fast. So they're different. That's another thing. Vary the songs. The other thing is, at times, it's good to get a little bit silly, and so they'll want to just sing the original song. Yay, hey, ho, and up she rises. Hey, ho, and up she rises. Hey, ho, and up she rises early in the morning. So, you know, throughout your day, you've got a minute here, a minute there. It just cheers the children up to have something a little bit bright and cheerful, and they think, oh, they start making relationships there. So that's a fun thing. Also, when we study the Age of Exploration, the Tudor monarchs were reigning. And the Tudor monarchs, I've always been interested in English history and thought, oh, that'd be fun for them to learn. Those are very interesting people. And I do little bios of them once in a while. So I thought, well, there's that tradition, isn't there, that Henry VIII wrote green sleeves about one of his wives. That's the tune to What Child Is This? So that's what we did. The Tudor monarchs are Henry VII, Henry VIII, and Edward VI, Mary I, and Elizabeth, followed by the Stuarts. So now everybody knows the Tudor monarchs. For the Stuarts, it's a little bit more involved. You could use that with older children. It has a lot more to the verses, and it talks about Shakespeare, who knew James I and wrote for the kings. And then there's Samuel Rutherford of Lex Rex and the Divine Right of Kings and how they believed in Lex Rex and third grade. Guess what? Those are two of their Latin words. So it is so wonderful to connect their Latin with their history. And they love to go home and tell their parents they know what Lex Rex and Rex Lex are. And the whole story of Rutherford that I had to come to one of these workshops to learn about from, I think, George Grant or Doug Wilson. And anyway, so that's another song we have. And I set that one of the Stuart monarchs to God Save the King, which is our tune in America for My Country Tis of Thee. And I won't sing that. It's a little involved. Anyway, if you look at the rest of your classical tools, you've got lots of things there to choose from, and I encourage you this summer to go to yard sales to find great visual aids for some of your classes. My Laura Ingalls Wilder student didn't know what a mortar and pestle was, so for that one lesson every year, I was on the hunt for a mortar and pestle, and I found a beautiful marble one for $1 at a yard sale. Thrift shops, dollar stores, you can find great things. And just that one little item will bring a lesson to life. It's a great thing. Flashcards of the presidents. We have North Carolina birds, fish. And those are great. For 5 minutes, you know, you just keep these things at hand, at your desk. We have a special drawer where we keep all the flashcards. And it's great. You can just grab them for 5 minutes, or 2 minutes. In 2 minutes, you can cover a lot of bird flashcards or the art. We do art appreciation. And each year they add so many of the famous paintings. So it's great to go over those. Jingles, we'll go over a couple of those later. Motions. Let's all stand up and do some motions. You may already do some of these in math, I think. But let me tell you one about for reading. We do the plot or the storyline. And so we make a triangle. I'll draw the triangle on the board. The rising action, descending action. I'm sorry. Rising action, climax, descending action, resolution. And we do it like this. Rising action, climax, descending action, resolution. So you're making the triangle that you draw on the board or have a poster with your own arms. So we do it again. Rising action, climax, descending action, resolution. Once more, we do everything about 3 times. Rising action, climax, descending action, resolution. Great. And then for math, of course, you've got parallel lines, vertical lines, horizontal lines, oblique lines. You've got line segments. You've got lines, rays, perpendicular lines. You can do with the second grade, maybe they do the angles with big arms. In third grade, we're a little more sophisticated. We do it with our fingers. We do acute angles, right angles, oblique angles. They love that. Try and get the oblique angle. So we try to do everything we can with our hands. Motions are wonderful. Walk through the Bible also, if you've ever had the opportunity to have that training. You may have a seat. Thank you. You're great. Walk through the Bible has motions going along with the chronology of the Bible. I just do the Old Testament, but it's wonderful. It has a lot of motions. It's helped me remember the chronology better. And the organization from Atlanta often gives their training at churches and sometimes conferences, and it's been well worth it. Recitations, poetry is so important. I was reading Doug Bond, a teacher and author lately, and he was saying how poetry is just dying in America. It's just irrelevant. People just don't want to learn poetry. They don't see a need for it. And yet, how important it is. C.S. Lewis said that the greatest poem ever written was Psalm 19. And I just read that. So I think I'm going to have third grade learn Psalm 19 this year. I never thought of that. We do Psalm 100 at Thanksgiving. And I love the King James version of Psalm 100. I'm sure you all have scripture memorized in your classrooms. But some of the poetry in the Bible is just wonderful. And then there's the ongoing poetry of hymns. John Greenleaf Whittier said the greatest poetry ever written were the hymns. And so and I'm sure many of your schools also have the hymns sung. We do 5 new ones every quarter. Doug Bond, this author, said, Poetry's role is to adorn truth by creating pictures with words, figurative language, and by creating music with words, employing sound device like alliteration, rhyming, etc. We do some memorizing of poems. I'd like to do a little bit more in our school. A teacher long ago showed me and others how to do some of the A.A. Milne poems, In the Dark, and others. And there's another great book, a poem called Book Houses. It's a simple one for third and fourth graders, but it's a lot of fun to do by Annie Fellows Johnston. And you can find old books. I love to go to discarded library sales. And this is a poetry book for fourth grade. So way back when children learned, these were books of poetry that the children learned. I'd like to try to find the others. This is just the fourth book. I wonder what's in the third. I'm going to try to hunt it down. And choose some, and that's where I found this Book Houses by Annie Fellows Johnston. I'd like to do the Vespers for you. What's great about, I'm going to get ahead of myself. Vespers is a poem by A.A. Milne, and it's a lot of fun to act out. And I tell the children in third grade, even if they think it's a little childish for them, they can use it for babysitting or for their cousins later on. So I'll do this for you. I hope you can hear me. Little boy kneels at the foot of the bed, droops on little hand, little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. God bless mommy. I know that's right. Wasn't it fun in the bath tonight? The cold so cold and the hot so hot. Oh, God bless daddy. I quite forgot. If I open my fingers a little bit more, I can see Nanny's dressing gown on the door. It's a beautiful blue, but it hasn't a hood. Oh, God bless Nanny and make her good. Mine has a hood. And I lie in bed and I pull the hood right over my head and I shut my eyes and I curl up small and nobody knows that I'm there at all. Oops. Thank you, God, for a lovely day. And what was the other I had to say? I said, bless Daddy, so what could it be? Now I remember, God bless me. Little boy kneels at the foot of the bed, droops on little hands, little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. Thank you. I'm always indebted to Mrs. Mostrom for passing that on. And if you want me to do it In the Dark later, I can do that. But that make up your own. They are fun. The children love poems. And we do this for assemblies, for ourselves. They really enjoy that. Timelines, Mrs. Detweiler told us yesterday how important they are, and I love good timelines and pictures. And to help them, great for integrating because you can just keep going back and pulling things. Like that first lesson where we learn about, in history, learning about Gutenberg and the printing press and how wonderful and important the Bible is and how it has affected history. In May, I can ask the children now, how long did it take to write a Bible by hand before the printing press? 10 months to 2 years. They all know that. And unison responses that are, I ask the whole class many times, you know, how much did a book cost before, how much did a Bible cost before the printing press? And they'll all say, as much as a house. And what did they do with Bibles? Because there was, how many Bibles did each church have back then? Because they were so expensive. Just one. You know, you review throughout the year, and they love that they know things from the very first, and they're so proud of themselves. And I love to see that they remember what you taught them from the beginning, and that it's something exciting, even though it's not a television screen, it's not a movie, it's not something happening fast. They learned it, and they love it. Demonstrations are great. My colleague that's here today, Chris, she does the science in our class, and wonderful to have volcano demonstrations and fish dissections, to go on field trips and see a cotton gin take the seeds out of the cotton, and all demonstrations are wonderful, and we'd like to do more and more if we could figure out how to do that. Plays are great. I wish I had the ability to write more. I wrote one back in college for a joint project for how to teach art and music in elementary school, and we do the same play every year, Thanksgiving with the Indians, and the children love that. And you'll find what I love about plays, one thing is that the children who maybe are not the most academically gifted, some of them are incredible actors and actresses. Some of them shine, and when they get that attention, they just blossom. And I, 1 year we did Twelfth Night with Shakespeare, written by a second grade teacher in couplets. She's done all of the, and her name has slipped my mind right now, but she's written all of Shakespeare's plays in couplets for second graders, and they do it at the Stratford Festival, her second graders. So my dear daughter put it into a dialogue form. It's hard to explain, but the children were able to do it. And it was amazing to me that those children, the third graders, could learn all of those parts. It was a wonderful experience. It takes a lot of time, and we can't always find that kind of time. But that class, there were children there that just blossomed in a way that I just had not expected or seen before. So I've learned a lot about plays being important. And the integration that we're here learning about, the children see that when they study one subject, they don't forget about the others. They're all connected. Now, how do you implement these tools, developing the lessons? If you look at the next handout, Seeds of Integrative Learning, I have a short one from the beginning of the year when the children's attention span is not long. So I have not integrated all of the subjects. We did prepositions. I'll just quickly go over how that goes. This is a brainstorming sheet. This is just a brainstorming sheet to give you ideas. Like, these are some of the subjects that you might want to integrate. You might want to integrate throughout the whole day, take sort of a unit, or this, what I love to do is to take one lesson and integrate it. So the preposition one is a half hour lesson, and it's using Vespers that I showed you. And what I'll do is decide, okay, I wanted to teach prepositions. I had already taught them songs with prepositions. Often you teach a song ahead of time, so the child already knows, or they've learned a jingle that has several parts, and the part you want to teach, maybe they haven't learned yet, but they learn the song, and then you can use that as an introduction. So anyway, I decided I wanted to use Vespers as the application and the review at the end. When I'm planning a lesson, I would have in mind or in front of me the seven laws of teaching and the classical tools, because in a half-hour lesson, we should have about 4 to 8 of the classical tools in a half-hour lesson, in up to an hour. So you want to try to fit 4 to 8 of those tools in. So I think about that. And that is already, I could have written those down here, but which tools those are, but you can check those out. So anyway, so you start with the lesson, you think about the end, what you're going to do at the end, and then you try to fill in how are you going to get from the beginning, that lesson, and you're reviewing because you're going to go from the known to the unknown. So we have a review of something they know to lead into the lesson, and then have the lesson and come down to the review and application. And I always stop, and I love to read a psalm before I'm preparing and ask the Lord to just guide my thinking, because it takes a lot of creativity to do this. And by nature, I don't always have that, but the Lord does. He is the author of creativity, and I ask him to just guide my thinking. So this is how the lesson actually went when I finished, because after you do this brainstorming sheet, then you're going to write out a seamless lesson. You're going to say what you do first, what you do next. I hope I'm saying this clearly enough. I've been doing it for so long, I forget how to always the incremental part of this. There are many parts to it. So let me say that you go from the brainstorming sheet to writing it out so that you know what you're doing from beginning to end, and you'll work at it, at making it seamless. And how you tie it together to what you say to the children to tie one section to the next is something to work on. So for 5 minutes, we did grammar in a nutshell, which is a chant that tells what each of the parts of speech are. For instance, the preposition part goes, a preposition stands before a noun, in and by and or through downtown. So we say the whole, but it does the whole thing. It starts with three little words you often see are article, adjectives, A, N, and the. It's a chant I adapted from an old school book. So we did 5 minutes of grammar in a nutshell. Then we did a preposition chant and a song. Those were our review. And then we did 5 to 10 minutes that I explained and demonstrated prepositions. Again, with motions, you've got over and under and through something and around. And pictures, I had pictures. And then we had sentences on the board. And we used our sentences from our rainforest unit that we study at the beginning of the year. Then the children had not heard the poem before, so I told them, I asked them, what does Westbear mean? I said, do you know that word, Westbear, from Latin? And they knew it meant evening or evening star. And I told them, well, the name of the poem I'm going to do for you is Vespers. Does anybody know what Vespers is? It's a Latin derivative. It's a derivative from the Latin. And then they said, no, they didn't know what that was. So I told them, no, that's an evening prayer. Those are evening prayers. And so then I did the little poem for them. And then for 15 minutes, we handed out a copy of the poem to each child. And they put a box around each of the prepositions. And I did a couple with them and then circulated around the room to make sure they could find them. And since they've memorized the preposition song, which you do have, and we'll look at that in a minute, they were able to do that. So that was a kind of a brief lesson. The other lesson on the back of the handout, this is from later in the year when they have a little more of a attention span. They're used to listening and thinking about a lot of things. This is a simile lesson. And again, you can read this through, or I know we'll run out of time here. Again, I wrote out the steps in order so that after I did all of this brainstorming sheet, I wrote out the steps in order so it would flow seamlessly from beginning to end. And so for 5 minutes, the children sang, "Here We Are in New South Wales," and that's under geography. I taught them a song. It's a folk song from Australia. It's a song that I used to I used that tune to sing the 10 provinces of Canada. But it's a great song for teaching the similes, because it talks about shearing sheep as big as whales and that they have hides as tough as rusty nails. So we learned that song together. And then I explained the comparison. The similes are a comparison using like or as, and that's a little repetition that they say throughout the year. I'll say anytime, class, what is a simile? A simile is a comparison using like or as. And so we have lots of repetition. Then for 5 minutes, I had volunteers coming up and drawing objects out of a bag to demonstrate similes. That's under reading. We learned black as coal, sharp as a tack, fresh as a daisy. I had a whole bag of little objects that they pulled out, and we talked about what the common similes are. And then I had a beautiful picture book of Emily Dickinson poems, and I just read to them the first stanza of "There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry." So under reading again, I read them that poem, and I had the lines also written on sentence strips. I save all my magnetic advertising things you get in the mail, and also magnetic strips, and put those on the back of sentence strips, and then I can put those on our magnetic whiteboard. Magnetic whiteboards are wonderful, so that I can go from one thing to the next without taking a lot of time to write. Though I have to say, I've become pretty adept at writing and talking on the board and having them chant little things while I'm writing and asking them questions. But that does take a while. So putting the sentence strips up really helps. So we discussed the new vocabulary, because, of course, a third grader probably doesn't know frigate and coursers and prancing. And then we talked about the parts of speech in that. They knew the adjectives. They knew the nouns. And so, again, we recited that grammar in a nutshell. And then I took 10 minutes under the history to tell the story of Emily Dickinson. And she's a pretty interesting character, so we had a lot of fun with that. I had a basket of cookies tied with a rope, because she would put the basket of cookies out the window and give cookies to her nieces and nephews and the children. And then also she always wore white, so I had a fancy white dress that, like, she would have worn hanging up front. And so, and her poems that her sister-in-law discovered, were tied up in little rolls and ribbons in the bottom of her drawer. So I had some of those for the children to just have a visual aid. Then of course the children got the cookies afterwards. And then for 15 minutes at the very end, they copied the verses into their journal. We have journals, and they write articles on the right-hand side and draw illustrations on the left, so that's what they did. And I had them underline the similes with a ruler, and again, draw an illustration of this poem on the left-hand side. And I do have a couple of examples of third-grade journals up on the table. So integrated teaching engages the students and inspires a love of learning. And as we've been told over and over, children should know that you love them and that you love teaching them. As you're teaching these lessons, the only way these will come across well is if the children know you love them. And how do you show that you love them? You have to give them individual attention. Of course, we talk to them at recess and at lunch. My daughter, who's now grown, she said one thing she loved is in sixth grade, her teacher met each one of them at the door and shook their hand. I always remember she thought that was just wonderful. She loved that. Another thing she liked a lot is every morning when she went into sixth grade, after the teacher greeted her, there'd be a sentence on the board with something that wasn't right. There was some kind of a mistake in it. And you would sit down and write it correctly. And she thought that was a wonderful thing. Every day that was just their little routine to correct the sentence that was up on the board. Another thing we found that keeps the children engaged is to make sure you're not leaving anyone out, that you have a way of calling on every child. And so I also got this from one of my daughter's teachers at another Christian school, and that is to put each child's name on a card. And throughout the day, whenever I call on someone, I just go to the next card, the next card, the next card. Because I would find that I was calling on children in just one section of the room, or I've also heard that sometimes teachers tend to call on either boys or girls. It's just, you don't even think about it. Sometimes it's a subconscious thing that you just overlook a quiet, shy child. And having been an extremely quiet, shy child myself, I can appreciate that. And also as a teacher, you might think, oh, they're so quiet. I'll make them uncomfortable calling on them. Nope, their card is there. I'm going to call on them. They're going to answer this question. It's good for them. And we have them answer in complete sentences. They get used to hearing their voices and getting up and speaking. So I love using the name cards. Also, it's great for when there's a special treat. You like somebody or a teacher wants some help carrying something up to the art room or to go out to the car and help them carry in a box. Everybody's hand goes up. Everybody wants to help. Who do you pick? Oh, well, you have to go to the cards. The children understand that it's impartial then. They don't think you're just, you know, you always pick so-and-so. Nope. Mrs. Whittington, we just use the cards, whoever's next there. And they accept that. It's like, oh, all right. Another thing I discovered, I have a glass canister of plastic gold coins from the thrift shop. And when a child answers a hard question or a team of children win the Latin contest on Thursday, or a child just does an exceedingly fine piece of work, and it's just a great way to recognize all the children. Every child, at some point, you can find a way that they earned a gold coin league, you know, really. I mean, we don't just give them out. I mean, at the end of the year, I did have two children that had 24 that they had, and now they get to turn them into a treasure box. So the parents send in pencils and little toys and things like that that they can redeem with their gold coins. But at the end of the year, I did have a couple children that had like 24 coins. So I had special things at the end of the year for them to choose from. And that was a big deal. But one thing I discovered this year was wonderful. Have you ever had the grammar lesson where you have three long pages of capitalization rules and punctuation rules, and they have to find the rule number and fit it in and show? This is at third grade level, at least. I think also second, where they have to show what the rule number was. I never figured out till this year how to make that fun. As soon as I said, the first person to find the rule gets a gold coin, it was a gold rush. They loved it. And they soon found out that just picking any number wasn't it. It wasn't like, number four, page, you know, no. They had to have the right one. So they really engaged their minds. I was so happy because that was one page of work, and I understood how important it was, but I just couldn't see how to make that engaging, so that was great. Literary devices is another wonderful thing. If you look at the page of literary devices, I know we have to hurry here. This is not written to something in the common domain, public domain, so I cannot sing this for you. I have to get a copyright on, get a right to do this or put it to another ditty. But it goes like this. Literary devices and figures of speech, simile and metaphor, irony, hyperbole, alliteration, personification, and one more too. Onomatopoeia, which is crash, bang, boom. The children learn this early in the year, and they love seeing these figures of speech everywhere. By the end of the year, the last day of school, I had five children sitting in the classroom. What are you going to do? Everyone's going home. It's summer vacation. So I got a simple picture book, Hot Air Henry. I love Siamese cats, and it's about a Siamese cat. And on every page, there were several literary devices, and the children enjoyed finding each one. So we ended the year up with this, using this, and seeing how much they had learned. It was a real joy. Metaphors, there's a very important metaphor that I use with them at the beginning of every year. I tell them that because they have to have their eyes on me. I'd never start a lesson till they're all quiet and they're watching. So I tell them the students are the, and they all say orchestra, and the teacher is the conductor. So keep your eyes on the conductor. So you all can do that with me. Ready? The students are the orchestra. The teacher is the, so keep your eyes on the. And they love that. It gets them focused every time. Also in the Bible, we read through the book of John and all of the metaphors for Jesus, Lamb of God, the vine, the good shepherd. relate to that. That is wonderful. Irony. I thought, how are we going to do that? Well, when we studied the Mayflower, found out, lo and behold, that the Speedwell had been coming over with it, but they got out to the ocean, and the Speedwell had a leak and had to go back. So they understand, that was ironic. The Speedwell didn't speed very well. I had to go back, and everybody got on the Mayflower and came over. That's why it was so crowded. So as soon as they forget what irony is, I always remember the Speedwell? Oh, yeah. And then they love to come into school and tell me, it was ironic, Mrs. Withington, that it was ironic that a fire truck was at the side of the road on fire today. Or it was ironic there was a pit bull on TV named Fluffy. Hyperbole. They're like, I'm starving to death. No, you're not. That's a hyperbole. Alliteration. They love Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, a peck of pickled peppers. Where's the peck of pickled peppers Peter Piper picked? And so on. They find a lot of those. Personification. We study the poem by Joaquin Miller about Columbus. This mad sea shows his teeth tonight. He curls his lip. He lies in wait with lifted teeth as if to bite. And onomatopoeia. They love finding all of those things too. I know it's time for us to go. I just can't say enough to you about all the things that I would love for you to bring into your classroom. Favorite books like Heidi. I have my ancient copy that I love to show the children. I loved it to death. It is worn, and sometimes the children like it when I actually read out of this one, like Mrs. Withington's ancient book. There are so many things I could say, but you want the demeanor of your children to clearly demonstrate that you understand the relationship between rigorous and loving classical education and consistent and loving training or discipline. With these elements firmly understood, your pursuit and application of classical methodology will be healthy and thriving in your classroom. To aid in this, the classroom procedures should be quick and efficient. We should always be looking for ways to improve our classroom management. I hope I have given you a glimpse into the tapestry of integration where you weave the many threads of knowledge into a beautiful whole. I also pray that the other picture of knowledge as seeds will come back to you this fall with your class, as when as folk singer Stan Rogers sings, you will put another season's promise in the ground. May you see those seeds of knowledge you sow grow up in your students, who will one day rise up and thank you, their teachers, by living lives producing fruit to God's glory. Thank you very much.